A caller says, I'm a school bus driver because I drive children to special schools. We're all in mini buses because they're picking up smaller amounts of kids. According to Bus Éireann, I can't drive that mini bus anymore, yet I own and drive a 7-seater. Surely I'm within the law to drive. That's all that matters. Plus, I'd say at my age, I'm a more careful driver now than ever before. I would agree. And what I don't understand is how this is not a bit more controversial, because according to the state, you are entitled to drive. You are legally entitled to drive, and the state permits that. Yet Bus Éireann quote the Road Safety Authority of Ireland, which I think is quite interesting, stating that you're less safe to drive because you're 70 or over. So you're legally allowed to drive a bus, doing other stuff according to the state, the rules of the land, effectively. But Bus Éireann, they're quoting external studies and the Road Safety Authority saying you're not safe enough to drive children. Like, surely that is open to challenge, whereby a company's policies do not align with at least the spirit of the law for the land. Does that make sense? I'm not sure who might challenge it, but it certainly seems open to challenge. Maybe it's happened already in the past. E-scooters annoy me, and the Gardaí don't seem to do anything to stop them on our pavements, and you're not allowed to carry bags on them. One passed me yesterday on the pavement carrying two large bags. If new rules are made, why are they not implemented? Thank you for airing my views. Well, they're not allowed seats either. They're not allowed to exceed a certain wattage or speed, and it is a free-for-all. I don't like seeing them on the road either, to be honest. I don't think they appear safe at all to me, but that's the rules of the land, and people can use them, but they don't. You see them, even as I drive down from here, people coming up the wrong way on the footpath on scooters. That's illegal. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. But Gardaí can't be enforcing that left, right and centre, because I think they'd be dealing with that almost every day of the week. But anyway, maybe they should be. I don't know. Let's stay on the roads. Road safety. There's a few factors. There's driver behaviour. There's the condition of the vehicle. But there also is, of course, engineering elements to this. The road itself, or what might be along the road. William, good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
All right. What's the issue you want to raise with us this morning?
Well, you know the road that goes up over the hill under Fogg, you're in Rafogg a couple of weeks, maybe you went up that road.
Mm-hmm.
Mungare.
Mm-hmm.
The forest day was taken down there in January, was it Storm Owen, wasn't it? Was the big one. And a lot of it was taken down, but the issue I have with it is the cousin, he went across the road to the guy that's felling the trees, and he's German, so he didn't speak English, but he's got him on contact then with a guy from America, and they said that they weren't, that they left a row of trees along the road, and them trees now are they're just a pure danger, like that somebody's going to get killed.
But before we get to that, which the reason they weren't cut down is an interesting one.
Yeah, well, the reason why they weren't cut down, from what he got from the American, was they were planted because they're along the roadside, and because there's wires there, electric wires. Now I think it's only a phone wire, but that's the reason that the guy on the phone said that they weren't being cut. Now I don't know, but health and safety and all these things. You need a safe pass to do anything nowadays. And at the end of the day, they shouldn't have planted them there if they can't cut them.
It's a problem of their own making. You've planted trees where you can't cut them down.
This is exactly. I mean, they're going to have to get on tree surgeons, because at the end of the day, that last storm, Flores, was it then? Mm. The name of it, I think. And I mean, there were no serious one at that time. And the cousin, he went out. He was up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and come 9 or half 9, then there was a tree down across the road. Now that road is very busy for computers going to work, and you know the school's starting up now and things again. And we're coming onto that bad weather, and these roads, there's about 20 big tall fir trees along that road there.
Do you think they're more exposed now, William, to storms? I'm not sure how close the trees that were felled were to them, but are they more exposed now to the winds, I wonder?
This is why I'm worried about it, is because they're really exposed now because they haven't got the shelter of the other ones behind. Uh-huh. And not only that, Greg, the trees that fell out on them before have left them all weakened. Like they're obviously going to be a lot weaker than they would usually anyway. Mm. And as I say, they're a death trap. Like, there's something serious going to happen up along that road.
Yeah, and as you say, school buses, commuter traffic going up and down there. You know, it's a busy old road at the time of year we expect to see more strong winds.
Yeah, well, again, we'll go back to the issue. They brought in a track digger, and they read the opening as you drive in so that the lorries can get, you know, they made that wider. He come with a big blade on and opened that up so the lorries don't get scraped or that going on. And I can't understand for the life of me, that forest has been growing 25, 30 years, and the farmers have to trim their hedges every year. And these guys here come that day with this big machine. They've got, you know, like birch trees and all different types of trees planted along the face of the forest. Anyway, they've never been trimmed in 25, 30 years. Now I go up and down that road, I have a van there, and there's big branches hanging out, and I thought the windscreen was on top of me the last day because they broke a branch off of that last tree falling out, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't know who owns the forestry or who do you contact. Is it the council or who? This is the last, can't seem to, because some of it's private owned and some of it's...
Well, you see, the thing is the Wallings, well, whoever owns the land, as you know yourself, William's responsible for it. It sounds to me like at least one of these trees is going to come down. It's going to take wires with it. Surely the solution would be preventative. If you're cutting other trees, you just don't leave some because it's too awkward. I mean, that's
no. Well,
it's strange.
You definitely don't leave them as exposed as you said, Greg, as they are there now at the moment, because that wind blows in that strong gale wind blows in that direction of the road, and these trees, I can guarantee you, are going to come down in the next big storm that we have. I can guarantee it.
Yeah. Well, it's noted now. So we have the location. We have the warning. Let's hope it doesn't come to pass, as you say. You know, with commuter traffic, school traffic. It doesn't have to fall on something to cause the damage. People can crash into it or whatever. Right, William, noted. We'll, as you know yourself, it might be difficult to find out who owns what, but we'll put our feelers out and see what we get. Thanks for your time, William.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks very much, Greg.
Safe travels. Good to have you on, William. I was actually in Refo on Saturday night as well. Colleague of Aisling's, Aoife, celebrating her 30th birthday in the White Horse. Lovely wee spot, and a great day and happy birthday, of course. So never had a riffle, it seems, this weather. Right, let's go to Councillor Micheál Colum of Gallanaspig. Good morning to you, Micheál Colum. How are you?
Morning, White. Greg is the day. Myself and my colleagues, Dennis McGee and John Hamers, the three of us are here fighting amongst ourselves.
Good stuff. I like
over
to see
deers.
It. Excellent. Now, this is, deers are a funny old thing because, you know, they're big animals, they're beautiful, they're splendid. I love to see them about, but unfortunately, it's our fault, really. We've planted roads through their natural habitat, or we haven't done enough to control their numbers. And I'll tell you, they're a big old thing if you're unlucky enough to hit in a vehicle, Micheál.
Yeah, unfortunately, the other morning, around 5:30, 5:30 came on a woman going to her work, and just right across the road, a deer bounced off the car and wrecked the car, and the deer's dead. And the woman now was fairly shook up and really, really unfortunate, because a pretty new car and, you know, the poor deer itself, like. And, you know, and I know that, like, myself and Dennis and John were just talking about it there, and John was saying to me, like, that the last couple of years he's been flat out asking for signage to be put up along the area. Like, and we do know the spots that the deers do cross, and, you know, roughly within half a mile. And, you know, I think John's request is a fair request, and it's just not been adhered to. Now, I'm not going to come on here now and pretend I have any answers here. I'm not an expert. It's the ones out in Glenveagh that knows what they're talking about, and have had a few meetings with them in relation to this and other things. But I know it's kind of very divisive, and it splits people. Like, do we call for a cull, and then others would say no, don't.
Well, you see, the problem with it, Micheál Colum, there's two things going on. Firstly, last year we culled just shy of 3,000 deer in Donegal. 2,704. So 2,704 deer in Donegal were culled last year. The problem is we don't really know what the deer population is. There's never been a proper sort of census in relation to that. So that's a lot of deer. I mean, 2,704 is a lot of deer. Is it fencing? I mean, because how do we share the space with them?
Greg, how do you...
I don't know. You
can't fence it. Like, we've seen years ago when the deer was reintroduced out the back, Cooling Article, when they fenced that whole area. But sure, look, the deers are capable to get over the fence. And like that, they're all over the county and right across, I suppose, the whole country at this. And yes, we have to co-live with each other, absolutely. But I was talking to one of the shooters there lately, a mate of mine, Tarland. Like, he was saying, like, every two years the deer population doubles, and they don't have a natural predator, well, apart from the cars, but what do you call it?
But I think, I'm not sure if your mate would have any insight into this. We need to make sure we're culling...
Say that again?
I'm not sure if your mate would have an insight into this, but we have to make sure we're culling the right deer to control the population. You know, when there are people in the know that knows which... You know, so I don't know if it's the male deer or it's the female deer of calving age. You know, like, we need to make sure that if we're killing 2,704 of them a year, that we're doing it in the right way to actually control the population. We're not going to eliminate it, and I don't think any of us do, but there's a lack of information. That's the problem. You know, we're killing a lot of deer, but there's a lot of deer.
No, I think there are, like, the professional shooters out there that has licenses know what they're doing. Like, they're very capable. They're experienced. They know exactly which of them that needs culling, shooting. And obviously we do have another problem then with poachers coming in and, you know, cutting them up and throwing the carcass anywhere at all and taking the meat and selling it. But look, I would have a fair faith in those professionals at what they're doing. Doing, and Glenveagh are the ones that I think really knows what they're at. Like, but I suppose using this opportunity is that in the areas that has been high accident points, like, people need to slow down. And genuinely, just before I came on, this poor woman, just about a mile up the road prior to that, and I was saying to myself, you know, I just need to be more vigilant. And then, unfortunately, came on this on the accident itself, like, yeah, you know. You.
All right, listen, thank you for that. Councillor Micheál Colum, I got an aspect there. You know, we hear about some of them. We don't hear about a lot of them. And then we don't necessarily hear about near misses or if a car leaves the road, all that. The signage is grand. I just think sometimes, you know, those signs are quite popular around the county. But you kind of maybe roll the dice, do you, when you're driving, trying to be honest here, and you think, well, I've never seen one. Is it likely? But I don't know what we're going to do. We've culled 78,000 deer across the country last year. One of the biggest culls outside of Galway and Waterford and Wicklow was here in Donegal. But in Wicklow, they culled over 25,000. We're well behind that at 2,704. But what is the deer population of Donegal? So, you know, how can you effectively control or cull a species if you're not necessarily sure how many of the deer exist? Any insight into that? Any views or opinions? 086 60 25,000. Good morning to Lorna Wilson. Lorna, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Lovely to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, this is about a random act of kindness that you've been kind enough to share with us. So I'll just let you pick up the story, Lorna.
Yeah, it was so exciting. We were in the Water's Edge restaurant in just outside Rathmullen on Sunday for a family get together, and it turned out to be a surprise birthday for myself, a big birthday. And we had the balloons and all up in the restaurant, and everything looked fabulous. And we were enjoying our meal. We were having great crack. We'd had our starter and our main course, and all of a sudden, the restaurant manager, Mary McBride, came over and said, an American lady just across the way has paid for your meal. And I automatically thought, she's paid for my meal. My goodness, what a lovely thing to do. And Mary says, no, she's paid for everybody's meal. Now, there were only 17 people in the party, so she paid for 17 people's starter, main course, and a few drinks. And we were just, everybody just was stunned, including Mary McBride, the restaurant manager. Like, we were just all like, my goodness, my goodness. And so she hadn't left. So I went over and had about a very short 2 minute conversation with her. She gave me her name, her telephone number, and she's from Texas. And she paid a bill of 620, 630 euro. For
what a wonderful
people.
Thing. And even in the brief conversation or maybe a bit of online detective work since, do you know why she decided to do such a wonderful gesture?
Well, her name is Jacqueline Scripps, and she's from Texas. And she did share her phone number with me, and I have tried to text her, but she's obviously decided she's on holidays and is not going to interact until maybe she goes home. But she did say, and the guy just said, my goodness, why? And she just said, being 60 is such a special celebration, and she just wanted to make somebody's day. And I mean, she definitely made my day, the group's day, everybody in the restaurant's day. Even yesterday and today, we're all still buzzing. It's just such a, I don't know, it's kind of unreal.
It is. And I think it also, too, the fact that it was a surprise birthday, the surprises just kept coming. You know, firstly, it's a surprise birthday party, then Jacqueline's surprise generosity. It sounds like it. And in a fantastic setting as well at the Water's Edge Rathmullen. It just sounds like a dream birthday celebration.
It was. I mean, the Water's Edge is absolutely beautiful. Really, really stunning location. And I mean, the crack was already good, and then the whole mood just elevated. Like, and I mean, I think even yesterday and today, anybody that I've spoken to or, you know, shared the story with, they automatically become elated as well. You know, it's such like such a high energy and overwhelming and feel good factor that you get from somebody doing something like that, and even telling somebody good news in the world just seems to uplift, you know, the person you're telling. So it's just been a very, very, very positive start to the big birthday.
Yeah, but you're still in your late 50s, aren't you?
Yes, my birthday's actually
So let's not give it up yet. She's in her mid to late 50s, folks. the birthday party was early. That's probably why it was such a surprise.
Total surprise, yes. The birthday was a few weeks early. So, but I mean, I mean, being 60 is kind of it's a huge achievement, I think. I don't know why she chose somebody with a 60th birthday. Maybe she has a special reason. She herself said it was such a special birthday. So maybe she has her own reasons from choosing that. I'm not sure. But
yeah, and in a way, maybe she's paying forward an act of kindness herself. Who is to know? And as you say, it brings joy to people as you share the story, and you've bringing joy to people today. I'm sure sharing it with us, and you've shared it on social media, and lots of engagement and a lift for the Water's Edge as well too. Nice positive story. It's all good.
Totally, totally. I mean, the whole positivity. I mean, we were with a group of, you know, the people in our group ranged from we had a little child, but we had age 13 to age me being 60. And I mean, the role model, even just, you know, young people even observing somebody doing that, you know, it's like something that I suppose we don't observe a lot, you know, to that extent, the size of the bill that she actually paid. And I think it's just a total role model in society today that there are good people out there, that, you know, we can continue to pay it forward, and we can continue to do random act of kindness throughout our daily life, no matter how small or, you know, whatever way it is.
Well, that's it. I was going to say that, because in this case, her act of kindness was a monetary one, and that's lovely, but we can all do our bit, can't we? Lorna, lovely story. A very, very happy birthday. I don't want to patronise you, but I wouldn't have guessed the big birthday began with a 6. I'll just be completely honest with you. So 60 must be the new 40.
Thank you very much. That's very complimentary. Yeah.
We just have to tell our knees and hips that.
Thank you.
All right. Listen, take care, Lorna. Enjoy your birthday, by the way, and a lovely story. And thanks for being such a good sport and sharing it with us.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye. Happy birthday, Lorna Wilson there. Can you match that in terms of acts of kindness? €622 the bill was for, and the lovely lady was from Texas, Jacqueline Scripps. She's travelling around Ireland. I believe she's a photographer, obviously either well-resourced but also very generous. Can you match that? That's a pretty nice act of kindness. There must have been something in your life that you want to share with us that matches that. And as I say, the value of an act of kindness is not always the monetary value. We heard a little earlier on of a lady, or was it yesterday, whereby she had to get to work. She was stuck in traffic. The road was closed and someone led her effectively to work. Another act of kindness. What else have you come across? 086 60 25,000. Share your joy. 086 60 25,000, or call us on 074 91 25,000 via email. Motorbikes are travelling very fast going through Annagry these past few days. The roads are very busy through the village during the day and evening. It's a collision waiting to happen. There is, I don't want to paint all motorbike drivers, I certainly don't. I've never overtaken a bike. I've been overtaken by many, many bikes. This weaving in and out of traffic, going up the inside, outside. It's not illegal, it's perfectly legal. But you do see some very dangerous activity on the roads. And I think maybe because they appear so vulnerable, it kind of hits home more than maybe other vehicle dangerous driving. This crap of rules, you don't do this, you don't do that, it's all control. As for driving buses after 70, it's pure crap. This person likes the word crap, but I appreciate you probably censoring it for us. The correct story is the government are trying to stop all licenses at the age of 70. This is just the beginning of it. Soon car drivers, in fact, all drivers will lose their licenses at the age of 70. Just wait and see. And remember this text when it is looked for. I'll tell you why I don't agree with you. Because they're actually trying to push the retirement age out past 70. So if you're trying to do that, it would be counterintuitive then to stop people driving. We will be working, not maybe me, but certainly my sons. I think my sons will be working till 75. I think that's when the pension will kick in. So I don't agree with you. I respect your decision. You could be right. I'm not going to bet because I'll probably be dead. But yeah, I think actually what the state wants is working us working beyond 70, and I can't see putting us off the road helping that. Greg talking about roads and dark evenings. See the road between Carrigans and St. Johnson. It's a long stretch of road. Could you ask the council to paint the white lines again? It's so dark at night. Yeah, there needs that, not just there, but in a number of places. Greg, on the bus thing. Just say Paddy pulls up to lift your child. Good old guy, everyone's friend. He smokes 60 a day, heart condition, had a stroke last year. Is he your man? Rule is a rule. But sure, let's say he's 35 and he smokes 80 a day, has a heart condition, had a stroke last year. Is he your man? Or I can only go by the 70-year-olds I know. And the 70-year-olds I know have a lifelong experience of driving. They're driving on back roads. They're driving slowly. The buses are limited as to what speed they can go. And we aren't hearing about collisions left, right and centre of 72-year-old bus drivers. They are tested every year for their health. Their blood pressure's checked, their weight's checked, all that kind of stuff, as far as I'm aware. And that happens every year. They have to go and make sure they know the rule. The rules for being a bus driver are very strict. So this example, of course, if you're smoking 80 a day, you have a heart condition, had a stroke last year, you're probably not about at 71. I believe all the countries represented at that table have an ability to help Ukraine security-wise. We're a neutral country with no real army to step in to help Ukraine against Russia. My thoughts could be wrong. Your thoughts aren't wrong. You could be right. No one knows the answer to that. We'll probably end up, though, having a role in the security of that country alongside the other countries. We have had some amazing artists in this county this year, and even more to come. You hear Wet 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 are coming up at a different function. Nick Kershaw's knocking about the place. We've had the Saw Doctors, the Human League, and up there with them are the fantastic Undertones. This is all part of Summer Sessions. The Thursday, 21st of August, Summer Session kicks off the second weekend of gigs with the Human League, the Undertones and Nick Kershaw. It is guaranteed to be a brilliant night of music down at the Kiltoy Roundabout. We're joined on the programme by Billy Doherty, drummer with the Undertones. Billy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Billy. And you and the crew up in Donegal, and huge interest already in the gig. You're still enjoying the gigging side of things, Billy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, next year will be our 50th anniversary, which is unbelievable. And we still get the same enjoyment and the same fun as we did back in the day when we started. It's exactly the same, which is terrific.
And I think that the longevity of the band, by the way, when you says 50 years, I think there's a few people have fallen off their chairs listening to it because they'll remember some of the first music and go, what?
Yeah.
50 years?
Yeah.
But the longevity is remarkable. But that is down to the quality of the music, isn't it?
Yeah, we stood the test of time, thankfully. And when the band formed in 1978, and then we broke up in 1983. Fergal Shergi, he left the band, and then he went on to have a very successful solo career. But we reformed around about 1990 with Paul McLoone, who replaced Fergal, and we haven't stopped since. So every year it gets better and better. And the audience can vary from quite young to quite old. I've been very fortunate. One of the best things about playing with the band is I've gotten to meet all my kind of drum heroes from the time I met Paul Cook from the Sex Pistols and Rats Gabies, who's called Chris Miller from the Damned. And I had these guys' posters on my bedroom wall when I was a teenager, and now at 67, I'm meeting these guys for the first time, and it's like I'm meeting the heroes, and it's terrific.
I was going to say, they say never meet your heroes, but you're not disappointed. But of course, such is your skill set, Billy, and how popular and famous the band is. I'd say a lot of those drummers are feeling the same in reverse on another radio station somewhere. They're saying, I got to meet Billy Doherty of the Undertones.
Not at all. I mean, so these guys kind of influenced my drumming. So I was nicking or borrowing their drum patterns. It'd be nice now to think that they thought that I had an influence in them, but I don't think that's the case. But we've been exceptionally fortunate that the band has a longevity and it still continues. And we're really looking forward to doing the thing with the Human League. Actually, we mentioned one of the songs that we do is My Perfect Cousin. And on that song, we mentioned the Human League.
Wow.
And we met the Human League way back when we did Top of the Pops. But this is the first time ever that we'll be actually playing with the Human League. And I'm really looking forward to it. I actually got Dare. That was their LP that they were releasing in 1981, 82, which is a great album. Mm. So I'm looking forward to seeing the Human League.
There are bands that tour, and I don't want to cast any shade, but, you know, maybe some incarnation of the Drifters or something, and they play around the place, okay, and people go there for the nostalgia side of it, and that's perfectly fine. And as I say, they're doing the thing, and I don't mean this as a criticism, Billy, but what it's leading me to is the fact that you've got, of course, people that have been on the journey with you right from the very beginning, but a band like the Undertones, and given your catalogue, and much of the music doesn't age, it's just there and it's brilliant, right? You're picking up new fans all of the time, and I'm sure you see that in the faces when you look out into the crowd, you know, the people you'd expect to be there that have been following you for years, but, you know, maybe that group of 20 somethings that are constantly streaming you on Spotify.
Yeah, I mean, the audience that we get is very diverse. I mean, you get obviously, you know, people that are our age, and then you get like very, very young kids, particularly at festivals, which are more family orientated. I mean, the kids there maybe 10 years old, might even be younger, and they'd be there with their parents and their grandmothers and grandfathers. So it's a huge range that we get. And as I say, at festivals, we do attract a younger audience. It's amazing when we're playing, especially when we play, say, in Spain or Germany or France, that the audience actually knows the lyrics.
Yes.
They sing the lyrics back to us.
But you are aware, though, Billy, as a architect of this music, I mean, you are aware how often it's played, how significant it is, how instantly recognisable the songs are, how people's memories and lives are often intertwined with that music. You are, you as the artist, you do have that awareness. Surely the penny just doesn't drop when you see people singing back to you. You do get the significance of your music, do you? And that might sound patronising or insulting. I don't mean it like that, but I hope you get the spirit of the question.
Yeah, I don't really think about it, yeah. To be honest. I'm very grateful that we do get that reaction. But as I was saying earlier, because we're all quite close, I'm a very self-critical.
Yeah.
When we're doing a show, I'm still making mistakes. I'm still getting things wrong. But the continuity of the band still remains the same as it was back in 1978. We really never think about it. Well, I never really think about it, to be honest. And every time we do a show, we don't take it for granted. We think, right, this is our first show ever.
Yeah, wow.
And we just go at it as best we can and try and put on as good a show as we can. It's only, I'm actually in Brighton at the moment, and it's funny when people find out who you are. I mean, they are, like today I had to see a doctor in Brighton, and the doctor was asking da-da-da-da-da, and I told her, and she was absolutely gobsmacked. And I'm thinking, my God, I didn't think we were that famous. But we do seem to have a reputation, which is really good.
It's instantly great. I could say to my 20-year-old, I was interviewing Billy from The Undertones today, and he would go, what, The Undertones? That's They say youth is wasted on the young. Billy, is there anything you'd do differently in the last 5 years, or does everything happen for a reason? Or I mean, maybe you as an individual or collectively, you know, from when teenage kicks just kicked everything off, so to speak. But do you look back on those first 5 years? I suppose you've got this amazing reincarnation since, and think we could have done that, we should have done that, we missed that opportunity, or we didn't fully enjoy maybe what was there at that time. I don't know. Do you reflect on it at all, or are you future focused?
Not really. The only time that I really reflected on the strength and the importance of Teenage Kicks is whenever John Peel was a really famous Radio 1 DJ. So he kind of championed the band and whatnot. But unfortunately, whenever John Peel died, the band went to the funeral for John Peel. My Fergal had a solo career at this stage, and the church was a beautiful picture box church in Stowmarket in England. And we went to the eulogy, we went to the funeral for John Peel. And I looked behind me, and there was Robert Plant and Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin. I was thinking, my God almighty, we're in real rock and roll royalty here.
Yeah.
So anyway, they had the eulogy for John Peel, lifted up the coffin, and was carrying the remains of John down the aisle. And Greg, they started to play Teenage Kicks. And I was like, this is so strange. The back player, and he got really hooked up. And I took my eye off of Michael, looked through the head. I'm getting the people outside the church singing Teenage Kicks.
Unbelievable.
And that's the time when I really kind of understood the significance of the song. Until that point, I didn't really understand the significance of the song.
Okay.
Years later,
yes.
Go ahead there, Greg.
No, I was just going to say the line's breaking up a little bit if you've moved location, because I'd be very interested to hear this. The add on to this years later.
Yeah, years later, we met John Peel's wife, and she invited us to Peel Acres, where he would do a show from. And I never realised this. John O'Neill, who had written Teenage Kicks, he had given the original handwritten lyrics of Teenage Kicks to John Peel, and there it is in a little glass case in his house, which I never realised. So obviously John Peel, being quite middle class and quite privileged, that record really touched him in a really profound way that I didn't realise. And there's like five guys from the Bogside, basically, and Craigan, had the song and had such a profound impact on John Peel. It was remarkable. And because we had such a high regard for John Peel, that made things even more important to us. But I have to say, like with the band, I fulfilled my ambitions quite quickly. So anything after that was like a bonus. I mean, for me, getting a record made, getting it played by John Peel, and then getting Top of the Pops, I was just quite content with that. I mean, to me, that was it. I accomplished what I set out to do. So anything after that was a bonus. And thankfully, you know, we've stood the test.
Yeah, and then this bonus of, again, sort of this... playing with the Human League on Thursday, a bit of history and they're contained in your lyrics. Listen, it's been wonderful speaking to you, Billy. Thank you so much for joining us. Continued success and you're such a lovely down-to-earth person. And, you know, your John Peel story actually relates to an earlier question about if you realise, if you be conscious of the impact you have on people, because there are, you know, potentially thousands of John Peels listening to us right now, if that makes sense. Listen, Billy, the setting is gorgeous. I don't know, you're really going to enjoy the venue, actually. The crowds are raving about the setup, so it's going to be a great place to play. It's going to be a great night. Thank you so much for your time, Billy. God bless you. Okay, there is that line failing a little bit with us. That's Billy Doherty, the drummer with the Undertones. They are playing on Thursday, the 21st of August, at Summer Sessions. The Human League are there. Nick Kershaw is there as well, would you believe? I'm going to have to mute for 2.5 minutes on our socials. Don't worry about that. We're not going anywhere. Don't you go anywhere. I just want to let you know that we are in the midst of the mega summer draw. It's €20,000 to be won in cash. €2,500 of that's already gone to Falcara. So we've got €17,500 remaining up for grabs. We've got three draws for €2,500. This Friday, the Friday after, and the Friday after that. And then on that same last Friday, we've got €10,000 to give away. As was proven on Friday, this is kind of like a draw for us, not exclusively, but invariably, it is someone from this region that wins. And as I've outlined to you before, you know, to win €250,000 on the lotto, the odds are 18,000 to 1 here, much more favourable for you. So it's about whether you have a bit of cash to play with, and many of you do, and there's no shame in that, and you want to have a punt. You can get your tickets for as little as a tenner. They're €15 for one. That one could win it for you, but you can get 5 for 10 and put them all in your own name, or you can put them in other people's names as well. That's completely up to you. So if you want to get your tickets and then you can sit back and enjoy the next four draws, get onto the website highlanderradio.com, click on the link. It's perfectly safe and secure, but if you want to get your ticket now and make sure you have it, and you can join our Falcara listener in winning, well, give us a call here, 07491 25000, and we'll get your ticket in the bag for you. We give you a number, the number is drawn. You don't have to ring, sorry, you don't have to answer in 4 or 5 rings. You don't have to, if your number comes out, you've won. Right now, we might try and give you a call to get on and share the fun with you, but you don't have to answer. So if you work in an office or you work behind the counter in a shop, don't worry about buying the ticket. You don't have to answer the phone. That's not part of the prize. As soon as your number's out, that cash is yours. We get it to you. Right, so we've 4 draws, 3 for €2,500, 1 for €10,000. Tickets are £15 for one, but you can get 5 for £50 if you want to get involved with your sister and your brother and buy them collectively. It's up to you. So €2,500 being given away on John's show on Friday. So if you want your tickets, give us a call, 07491 25000. But obviously, please do so if you can afford it. Have a bit of spare cash for fun. And as I say, sometimes people be afraid if they've got a few bob to enjoy it, because there's so many people suffering. But hopefully we can bring everyone up to a level whereby they live more comfortably. We got a letter in. It was a letter that was forwarded to us, and it was from Donegal teenager Ethan O'Donnell. He wrote to all councillors about the strain his family are under after rebuilding their home destroyed by defective blocks. His parents borrowed $50,000. They paid €24,000 in rent and lost thousands in testing costs because they were in early. This, do you remember we were talking about this last week? People who got in early, they're not being included in the 10%. That is retrospective, but there's a cutoff date, and there are a number of families that are missing out. So They borrowed 50 grand. They've paid out half of that in rent, and they've lost 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 on testing. And this is all because their rebuild finished just days before the government's cutoff, and they're excluded from the retrospective payment, which would just set them up, and it would make it a good scheme. And it's only a few million. In the wider scale of a multi-billion euro scheme, surely the logic would be to extend it to include as many as it's possible. But anyway, so Ethan wrote this letter to councillors, and I thought, well, let's hear it in Ethan's own words. And they were good enough to read the letter for us. So let's see what this young teen thinks of the situation this family find themselves in.
My name is Ethan O'Donnell. I live in Burnfoot, County Donegal, with my parents, my sister and my brother. Our house is one of the houses affected by defective concrete blocks. My dad asked me to write my thoughts from my perspective, and he would send it to local councillors, local TDs and members of the government. Here is my letter. Hi there. I am writing to you as I know a lot of my future is in your hands. Our house is one of the many in Donegal that was affected by mica. Our house got tested for mica in June 2020, and my parents decided to move us out of our home in June 2021, as the cracks in the living room were so wide along the wall and on the ceiling. By the time I went back to Skulwarra Buncrana in August 2021, we had to get on a different bus than before on our holidays. All through the time that we were in the rented house, I could see the strain that was on my parents every day as they tried to get us back home. We were in a tough situation, and I was trying my best to get on with my studies as the junior cert was around the corner. My sister Layla also started Skulwarra in August 2022. I started my junior cert in June 2023, which was right in the middle of the rebuild of our house. I tried to help my dad as much as I could, as well as keeping up with my studies. We finally moved home just before Christmas 2023, with almost all the work completed. I thought this was going to be the end of the pressure on Mum and Dad, but I know that we are under serious financial pressure, leading to loans from my grandparents from time to time. Dad always thought that once this 10% increase comes through, we'll get back to normal, but he told me that we won't get it because we finished our house too early. How can that be a punishment? How is that fair? I start my final year of Skulwarra this month, and I will set to my Leaving Cert next year with the hope of college next year. I'm afraid to apply for any courses that is too far away from home, as I know that my parents do not have the money to help me at the minute. I beg you to remove this stupid date on qualifying for this 10% increase, not only for my parents' future, but for mine and my siblings as well. Yours faithfully, Ethan O'Donnell.
Well done, Ethan. I know Mum and Dad and your grandparents will be very proud of you. An excellent reader and speaker, by the way. But you hear it in Ethan's own words there. Caroline, was it 8 or 9 houses that this sort of affects? Or maybe it was 4, 10, is it 10? So there are those that were told, look, get on this scheme, it's a good scheme, go for it. And they did. So they had to pay their own testing costs, which no longer has to happen. You do have to pay for a visual inspection, but the testing costs are covered now under this new scheme. And then in a great move by government, credit where it is due, it's something, they extended the cap by 10,000 euro. Sorry, by 10%, which equates to about 50 grand. But of course they had to pick a date from where that would apply. But because this house was finished just before that date, they don't qualify for this retrospective payment. And obviously, as you heard there, it affects the family, but it affects all of the family, even down to Ethan, who shouldn't have to worry about where he goes to college because his mum and dad are indebted because of this. Do you know where I'm coming from? He's too young. He's obviously a bright young lad, doesn't need to be worrying about that. So if they could just extend that back a little bit more, it'd catch in these 10-odd houses. That's 5 million. By my estimation, it's not insignificant, but you have to put it into the context of a multi-billion euro, a decades and decades long scheme. And it just makes it that little bit fairer. We'll see. That's where we leave it on the show today. Have a wonderful Tuesday, please. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay safe, though, and stay tuned.